Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Well, to not raise the debt ceiling could be a default of the United States on bond and treasury obligations. That would be very bad for the position of the United States in the world at large. But this is an opportunity to make sure the government is changing its spending ways. I will not vote for the debt ceiling increase until I see a plan in place that will deal with our long-term debt obligations.
That was Senator Lindsey Graham on Meet the Press this weekend, taking a firm stance against raising the debt ceiling unless certain conditions are met. Now, this is an issue that's already threatening to fracture the newly minted Republican majority. Tea Party supporters want a hard and fast stand against spending, which would include not voting for a higher ceiling for American debt, American borrowing. Meanwhile, Majority Leader John Boehner and other Republican leaders have pointed out that the ceiling needs to be raised despite the rhetoric about borrowing and the deficit. In an interview with The New Yorker, Boehner said, quote, "This is going to be probably the first really big adult moment," keywords adult moment, "for the new Republican majority." You can underline adult. "And for people who've never been in politics, it's going to be one of those growing moments," he said. "It's going to be difficult. I'm certainly well aware of that. But we'll have to find a way to help educate members and help people understand the serious problem that would exist if we didn't do it," unquote, John Boehner in The New Yorker, in favor of raising the debt ceiling. Now, we've already heard the political rhetoric changing in the new year. Talks about Bush tax cuts are out. Buzz about raising the debt ceiling is in. But what exactly is the debt ceiling? Why is it so significant? And what would happen if, as Senator Graham has said, there is no political will to raise it again unless there are huge spending cuts across the board? Dan Gross is the economics editor for Yahoo Finance, and he's here to explain what exactly the debt ceiling is and why it's an important piece in the early going of the puzzle for the 112th Congress. Hey, Dan, welcome back to WNYC.
Good to be here.
And listeners, we know this is one of those things that you don't necessarily really get what it is unless you're an accountant or you read the fine print of every political website every day. So if there's a question that you always wanted to know the answer to about the debt ceiling but never had anyone to ask, now you do. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Dan, as simply as you can, what is the debt ceiling?
It's basically the law that limits the amount of federal debt that the U.S. government can issue.
It's not very effective then, because the current federal debt is about $14 trillion, isn't it?
Right. Well, it's like saying you have a speed limit, but then every time, you know, a car is invented that can go faster, they raise the speed limit. So we've had debt ceilings since 1917, when the U.S. first issued long-term debt to fund the war. And it's become this sort of kind of kabuki theater where the opposition party, if they're in control of the House or the Senate, whether they're Democrats or Republicans, makes a big stink and say, "We're not going to vote it, you know, to approve it, and we'll set up this big showdown, and you know, there's going to be the prospect of default." Democrats refuse to vote on it or drag their heels when there's a Republican president. You know, during the Bush years, the debt ceiling was raised 7 or 8 times, and Republicans do the same, except they do a much more hardcore version of that, which is just kind of try to shut down the government. We saw that happen in 1994, 1995.
So in any year that the government spends more than it takes in which there's an annual deficit, then they have to raise the ceiling on the total accumulated debt to borrow that extra money?
But it's not just about spending. There are basically two ways the government creates debt. One is by issuing bonds to pay for our operations. We collect $2 trillion in taxes. We spend $2.5 trillion on defense and all that other stuff. So, you know, the debt would rise by $500 billion that year. In addition, for things like Social Security, mostly Social Security and to a lesser degree Medicare, the government issues IOUs to, you know, what people used to call the Social Security Trust Fund. But basically every year creates new debt to fund those entitlements in the future.
Because general operating has been borrowing from Social Security, which for all these years, despite all the rhetoric, has actually run at a surplus.
Right.
Social Security takes in more from the payroll tax than it pays out to the current elderly, basically for all its history. But the general operating fund of the federal government has been borrowing from Social Security.
We take the Social Security payroll taxes, we spend them this year, and then we issue IOUs to the Social Security Administration for the future.
And that's part of the debt.
That is part of the debt. So there are two classes of debt. One is debt held by the public. That is, we sell these bonds to the Chinese central bank or whoever. Those are traded every day. That's to fund our operations. The second class is called intragovernmental holdings. Those are bonds that are pledged to other units of the government. And when you add the two of those up, that's the total debt. Now, what usually happens is when they raise the debt ceiling, they say, well, raise it $700 billion, $800 billion. That should stand us in good stead for a few years so we won't have to face this difficult decision. And in 2000, 2001, when we were running surpluses, in 06 and 07, when the federal deficit was down to about $300 billion a year, that kind of forestalled some of that. Even in a year where the government is operating in surplus, the total debt can rise because we're pledging that money to Social Security. So just as a matter of course, even if we had spending under control, and even if we were spending the exact amount of money that we were taking in, the federal debt would still be rising because of Social Security, and you would need to do this maybe once every 3 or 4 years. But in recent years, as federal revenues have sort of fallen off a cliff, they fell 16% in fiscal 2009, as we've spent a lot of money on the wars and stimulus, as we've cut taxes, we are now having, even though they'll raise the debt limit by $700 or $800 billion, that only lasts you for 6 months when you have $1.4 trillion deficits. And so that's why it's coming up so frequently now.
So you get some Tea Party members saying, that's it, we're done with deficit spending, we're going to cut, 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 we refuse to raise the debt ceiling anymore, this is what we were elected to stop. You have Lindsey Graham, who's kind of in a sophisticated positioning in the clip that we heard, saying, I'm not going to vote to raise the debt ceiling unless we substantially cut spending. So he knows he has to vote to raise the debt ceiling, but he's going to use it to argue for as much spending reduction as he can get. Then, going further the other way, you get Austin Goolsbee, the chairman of President Obama's Council of Economic Advisors, who was on ABC's This Week on Sunday, and here's his description of some of the implications of not raising the debt ceiling.
If we hit the debt ceiling, that's the essentially defaulting on our obligations, which is totally unprecedented in American history. The impact on the economy would be catastrophic. I mean, that would be a worse financial and economic crisis than anything we saw in 2008. As I say, that's not a game. I don't see why anybody's talking about playing chicken with the debt ceiling. If we get to the point where you've damaged the full faith and credit of the United States, That would be the first default in history caused purely by insanity.
So Dan Gross, economics editor of Yahoo Finance, is Austin Goolsbee right? Would doing nothing create an economic catastrophe at the level that he was saying?
Well, first of all, I wish I had come up with that line about default due to insanity. Well, he's right and he isn't right because we've gone to the brink before. There have been situations in the last 10, 15 years where they're pushing up against the debt limit. There are a few million up to it and Congress is in recess or it's in between sessions or Congress is dragging its feet. And in that circumstance, the Treasury Department has some leeway. It can do things. It can kind of stop putting money into the federal retirement program and just sort of agree, you know, when the debt ceiling is raised in a few months, we will make good on that. So there are things it can do for a month, a couple months to avert congressional inaction. But the bigger picture is if, you know, there is a party in Congress that is intent on saying that we will not raise the debt ceiling and that we are conditioning this on dealing with long-term spending, which I think is a little insane because the debt ceiling has nothing to do with long-term spending. It has everything to do with the short-term spending and revenues. And, of course, the first thing that the lame duck Congress did, that the Republican leadership signed off on, was extending these tax cuts, which has the effect of hastening the day that we reach the debt limit, because it's depriving the government of revenues it would otherwise have if the tax cuts would have expired as they were slated to do.
Between the tax cuts and the extension in unemployment benefits, that was an almost immediate $900 billion increase
over several years
in the federal debt over a two-year period.
Right.
Okay. So Austin Goolsbee said if the debt ceiling were allowed to not be raised, then it would be the first ever default based on insanity. So George is calling in from Manhattan with a question about default. George, thanks for calling. You're on WNYC.
The question that comes up is that, first of all, in the 1840s, a number of states defaulted completely, and it took almost 50 years for them to straighten out their credit and the rest. The credit markets did go through the swan song or the dive that was being described, similar to what we had a couple of years ago. But they recovered pretty quickly when the railroads came in, and throughout the 1850s, financing took place, it went on, the economy turned around, and of course that became one of our great boom times. Mark Twain called it the Gilded Age. The difference in this case is that it seems that there is no procedure in place other than going to bankruptcy court for any governmental entity, whether it's a state, a county, a city, the federal government itself. And the question I had is whether there is any talk afoot anywhere, but I guess particularly it would start in the Judiciary Committees of the House and Senate, to talk about a procedure to be put into place in the event that a governmental body, particularly the federal government, does find itself in a default. That one of the big problems is that nobody knows what would happen. That's what scares everybody so, which is why the talk goes on about this. It's not to say that we shouldn't continue to raise the level of debt. My concern much more is that there is no real procedure that anybody understands in place in the event of a default for any of these governmental bodies that anybody could rest assured with whatever kind of bonds they have for whatever kind of issue there is.
That's a fascinating question.
So, you know, some states did default in the 1840s. Municipalities rarely, but sometimes do go bankrupt.
It's happening right now.
It's happening now, and there is a chapter of the bankruptcy code that deals with that. It's messy. States in the modern era have not defaulted, and they do not contemplate it. I mean, I think you figure that if an entity has the power to tax, it's going to be able to keep up with its interest rates. It may shut off, you know, California may shut off funding to the University of California or not pay for schools or not pay salaries, but it will be able to pay its interest on its debt. As for the federal government, I think just the prospect of that is just, it's one of those things that's too awful to even think about. It's like, you know, why don't hospitals have a protocol for figuring out how somebody is going to survive without a brain or a heart for 3 years? You may be able to rig something up, but you
really can't.
That ain't living, and you can't do that. So the federal government, I mean, you know, it seems an absurd way to have a debate, but the U.S. federal government cannot default on its debt. It just can't, and it can't because to do so would destroy our banking system because they're all stocked with government bonds as what people hold for cash. It would destroy the central banks of the rest of the world, which hold hundreds of billions. You know, it would be financial Armageddon.
Coming up in just a few minutes, Wayne Barrett will join us. The legendary Village Voice political columnist. Today is the day of his final Village Voice column after 33 years. And Wayne Barrett will join us on this day coming up in just a few minutes, right after we finish explaining the debt ceiling. This is one of the first big debates in the new Congress, which is being sworn in right now. We haven't heard John Boehner cry yet today, I don't think, but I'm sure it's a very moving moment. And one of the big debates that Boehner is having with his own Tea Party wing is whether to vote to raise the debt ceiling so the government can borrow more money to get it through the next year or two. Tea Party wing says no. Boehner says, sorry, you got to do it. The White House says it would be insanity. And the first ever government default, catastrophe caused by insanity if it was allowed to happen. And the White House aide who we played, Goolsbee, even goes so far as to say in that clip, Dan, that simply talking about not raising the debt ceiling is a danger, playing this game of political chicken, as it gives lenders less faith in the government to pay its bills. Do you think American debt is going to start being worth less just because the politicians are talking about not raising the debt ceiling?
No. I mean, the place to look at is the bond market. And obviously, the interest rate on the 10-year bonds, these longer-term debt, has risen in recent months. But that, I think, has more to do with the return of economic growth and fears of inflation rather than fears that you won't pay back your debt. You know, in the bond market, if people start to worry that you won't live up to your obligations, the interest rates spike. They don't just go up from 3 to 4%. They go up from 3 to 12%. If you started to see action like that, that would be a sign that the world is worried about it. But, you know, I've spoken with people in Treasury, including the Treasury Secretary, and I think, you know, the lesson they've learned from the last few years is that the world, above all else, wants our government bonds. They want them in good times, and they especially want them in bad times, so that every time there's some hiccup in Europe, crisis in Greece, concern about something in China, people go to the most liquid, safest investment in the world. And that still remains, despite all we've done and despite these games of chicken, that still remains U.S. government bonds.
But that's not natural law. That could change, couldn't it? If we borrow our 15th trillion and our 16th trillion and our 17th trillion and it becomes a higher and higher percentage of GDP, we could become Greece eventually, couldn't we?
No, I really don't think we could become Greece eventually. Greece was for, you know, they were stuck to the euro, so they weren't controlling their own monetary policy.
And as the baby boomers age and get more and more Medicare, more and more Social Security?
It's possible that we could have some sort of crisis, but, you know, we just have to look back to history. In 1980, yields on 30-year government bonds were 15%, okay? And the deficit was much smaller, right? So that had much more to do with concerns about inflation and stagflation and just people freaking out about that.
They raised interest rates to try to get a handle on
inflation. But even as inflation was under control in the 80s, yields on government bonds were still 10, 9, 8%. At the beginning of this decade, they were still 7. A couple of years ago, they were still 5. So you go back to periods in not just distant history, but 3 years ago, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, where we had much less debt, where there was much less concern about this, where debt to GDP ratio was much lower than it is, and interest rates were far higher than they were now. And so the question is, why? Well, you know, inflation has been slain. People are concerned about deflation. There's all this money sloshing around the world that needs to find a safe haven, and this is where it chooses to go. So I think there's much more to the dynamic of interest rates or things that would drive up interest rates beyond government borrowing. Because if it was simply about government borrowing and the level of debt, you would have expected that in the last 3 years, interest rates would have skyrocketed to historical levels. Instead, they've fallen to historic levels.
In fact, Dick Cheney, when he was vice president,
Remember
Dick Cheney? He's on the front page of the New York Times again
today. The guy without a pulse?
The guy without an official pulse. or the guy now officially without a pulse, maybe is a better way to say it. He said to his Treasury Secretary, Paul O'Neill, during a cabinet meeting, Reagan proved deficits don't matter. That was Dick Cheney during the Bush administration. Is that overstating the case?
No, I think when it comes down to it, Americans don't care about the deficit. It's just a cudgel that is used during elections. Republicans don't care about the deficit.
I think 40% of the voters this year said the deficit was their number one issue in the exit polls.
You can get 40% of the people to say anything, Brian.
Deficits don't matter. We can just borrow and borrow. I can't do that. You can't do that.
No, but the federal
New York State can't
New York State.
That.
Well, they've certainly been trying.
Yes.
But the federal government, I think its capacity to borrow is clearly much greater than the doomsayers have been saying for lo these many years.
Dan Gross, economics editor for Yahoo Finance, explaining the debt ceiling. Now you know. Dan, thanks a lot.
Brian, you said on Twitter before that I was going to get the enviable task award for explaining this, and I want to know what that award is because I already have 20 tote bags.
Uh-huh. The enviable task award is the guarantee of a return appearance to get the next enviable task award to explain something else. How's that?
And second prize is 2 repeat appearances?
We're working on second prize. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Wayne Barrett on the day of his final Village Voice column. Next.